This is Japan Baseball Weekly. News, interviews, analysis, and your questions, all about NPB. And now your hosts, Johnny Gibson and Jim Allen.
Hi, and welcome to the Japan Baseball Weekly podcast. It's for the week of July 22nd. I'm John Gibson, and with me early on a Sunday morning is my buddy Jim Allen. And dude, you were up early yesterday. What was going on with that?
I wish I had something that wasn't embarrassing. So there was nothing up with that.
There's nothing up with that.
There was nothing up with that except me.
Okay, because I usually get up early to hit the gym, and I said, well, let me send this note now to Jim, because if I don't do it now, I'll forget later. And you replied, and I'm like, whoa.
Yeah, no, I was horizontal, but it was a confluence of me not turning the sound off, the ringer off on my phone, and my happening to be awake at that instant. I was not up.
Okay. All right. Well, that's good to know. And hope you're doing well. I'm loving the heat here. You know me. I like summer. It's nice and sticky.
I'm having a crisis. Our Christmas tree is struggling.
Already. Christmas in July, baby.
It is. The German fir tree we got last year for Christmas that has been called, Terrio calls Jim Jr. is out on the veranda, and it's normally fine, except our veranda is about the size of the backseat of a Volkswagen Beetle.
So the Jim Jr. is continuously interrupting things.
Hashtag high heat.
No, but it's being terrorized by our air conditioner, because it blows straight onto it, and so I had to cut it down to size a little bit, trim off all the brown branches from the Terrio. Decided that it shouldn't be next to the air conditioner, so we moved it to the, you know, like 1.5 meters away to the other side of the veranda, where it was in a direct line of, in the blast zone. And it was turned in like a cutaway about a third of it the other day. So anyway, I'm hoping
that's no way to treat. Yeah, that's no way to treat Junior.
It is not.
All right.
It is not.
All right. On this week's show, we've got BayStars left-hander Anthony Kay. We look at the All-Star game rosters. We talk about some crazy games and handle some high heat. So let's start swinging.
Clearing the bases.
All right, so I caught up with Anthony Kay of the BayStars on July 13th, and this was at Tokyo Dome. And now, I was also, again, trying to get a chat with Ilier Hernandez of the Giants, and he got away again on this day, but I had a really great weekend. I was able to get 3 interviews between Saturday and Monday, the press holiday, and so we'll play those as we go forward here. But I did shake hands with Mr. Hernandez, and I actually kind of slipped him because I ended up talking with Giants reliever Kyle Keller. So I didn't actually see Hernandez sneak out, but I'm just assuming he did, because he has been doing that. He's been ducking us, man, like we're a championship fighter or something like that. And he doesn't want to get in the ring. But anyway, on this day, the first day out there, I was able to talk to first year pitcher Anthony Kay, and I talked to him before he headed out to the canopy in center. And when he came back, he said, "I'm pitching tomorrow, so I don't have much time." So that was good that he warned me. But as we're talking, if you can imagine, which I'm sure you can, Jim, the media PR guy was watching over, let's say, from a distance.
Yeah.
At least started out from a distance. And with every question I asked, it seemed the PR guy was moving closer and closer, like a stalker, a PR stalker.
Yeah, there's some of those.
There are a lot of them. And so I'm trying to ask questions and concentrate on the answers, but this presence keeps getting nearer and nearer. And so it's a 5-minute chat. And by the time I asked, I put up 2 fingers to the guys, and I have 2 more questions. And by the time I got to the last question, I thought he was going to break in and say no more. That's how close he was. I'm like, you know, guy, you do need to respect my personal space, even if you don't want to respect the fact that I have a right to talk to the pitcher.
Right.
And he has time. He's pitching tomorrow.
Well, they have to, you know, but you see, because he has an appointment.
I know.
He has an appointment with the other, with the beat writers. Now, and I'm only saying this because he'll have that appointment could be 20 minutes away.
Oh, yeah.
But it'll give the PR guy an excuse to
leverage.
To make your interview, you know, turn your interview with Anthony Kay into your interview with a vampire.
Interview with a vampire.
So, I mean, I've seen that, and I'll tell you, we were talking about this thing the other day, and what happened with me with Shun Mizutani last week at Cebu, when the guy basically said, you can't talk to players during practice, which is the only time we can talk to players.
Yeah, just why don't you just tell me there's you can't breathe during the daytime.
Yeah, you can't breathe when you're awake, you know, whatever. Anyway, so I realized it was 100% not about me or about anything, any rules. It was about showing a young player who was in charge, because a young, less established player, because my experience with Oryx, with Yoshinobu Yamamoto and Hiroyo Miyagi, when the PR guy would come to interrupt this, is they'd tell him to go get a sandwich and coffee and chill out.
Chill out. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. No meeting. Just get out of here.
Exactly.
All right.
The young guys can't do, they don't know they can do that yet.
Yeah, they'll learn, I suppose. Mm-hmm. So it's a quick chat, but it's very informative. So let's take a listen to Anthony Kay. All right, we're here with Anthony Kay of the Bay Stars. Thank you very much for taking some time to talk to us today.
Yeah, no problem.
All right, so you're born in New York.
Yes.
How did you end up all the way here in Japan with me?
Yeah, it's been pretty crazy. Obviously got drafted by the Mets, traded to the Blue Jays, and DFA'd, went to the Cubs, DFA'd back to the Mets, and then DFA again and back to, or then to Oakland for like 3 days, and then DFA again, so then I became a free agent, and then ended up here.
So now you're here, this is a crazy season. They talk about, we'll get to it, they talk about the baseball and all this stuff, but it's so crowded in the Central League. Like you trip and fall and you're in last place, and you step up a couple of steps and you're in first. What is that whole situation like?
Yeah, no, it's crazy. I mean, you can't really pay attention to it. You kind of just got to go out and just do your stuff every day, and you know, maybe pay attention to it a little bit closer to September and stuff. But right now it's so close. I mean, there's no point of even looking at it every day. It's just, it's a mess, and you know, I'm sure it'll even out eventually, and then, you know, we'll see, you know, who makes playoffs and who doesn't.
How much do you look at the standings? Are you that guy?
I would say yes, but like I said, like, since it's just so close, like, there's really no point, because one day I look, we're in first, and then the next day I look, we're in fourth, and it's like, what happened? We lost one game. So yeah, it's just, you really can't even look at it. So it's just something that you just gotta go about your business and just do your stuff and hopefully just collect a bunch of wins.
All right, now you seem to have found something recently, maybe it's some recent starts, it seems like. What's going on with you?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's just getting comfortable with the baseballs and kind of the style of play here. Definitely struggled a little bit early on, just, you know, getting used to it. And, you know, I think the mentality is a little bit different here. You kind of got to pitch to contact a little bit more rather than, you know, I think a lot of foreigners that come over here want to, you know, get strikeouts, kind of like in America. But, you know, over here, these guys are going to take your 97, 98 and just foul it off and until you give them a pitch to you know, put in play. So I think the big thing here is kind of just pitch to contact, and then you get your strikeouts when you get them, and then, you know, it's just, you just got to go about your business.
Now, what are you focusing on? Some guys come over, you know, they have to really focus on holding runners and not balking. The little lefties, the slap and run lefties, just slap the ball. I mean, what are you trying to focus on there?
The biggest thing for me is becoming a starter again, because when I was hurt in 21 and 22 and then 23, I switched to a full-time reliever role. So I think, you know, kind of getting that rhythm back to being a starter and building up to be able to throw 100, 110 pitches, I think that was, you know, the biggest thing for me. I've already thrown more innings than I have in the last, like, 2 years combined. So I think, you know, being able to keep my body in shape and be able to, you know, last through September is the biggest thing for me.
Especially now, since it's just now getting hot.
Exactly, yeah.
It's just warming up for you now.
Thankfully, we're in a dome this weekend.
Yeah. All right, so you and Andre and Rowan are learning about MPV as a new trio here. How do you like throwing to the catches?
I've only thrown to Yamamoto so far this year. I mean, different guys in spring training, but Yamamoto's been absolutely incredible back there. He's awesome. Me and him have a really good game plan together, and I think we do really well together.
How do you establish a rapport with these guys?
Just throwing to them. I think just getting comfortable with each other, knowing, you know, what you want to go to in certain counts and certain guys. And, you know, Udai has been absolutely incredible back there. And, you know,
I like it too.
When I lose my cool out there, he's there to calm me down. So he's really fun to have back there.
All right, last one. You guys and Andre both had Tommy John surgery, and you're coming off of that. How do you like throwing once a week in Japan, and what do you notice about that?
It's so much better. I mean, I've been saying for a while now that everyone in MLB should go to this, a six-man rotation, just to, you know, give guys more rest. You see everyone, you know, getting hurt nowadays. So I think the once a week here is incredible, especially for me, since I'm, like I said, coming back from being a reliever. I think it's like a nice little, you know, stepping stone to getting back to building up to being a starter. And yeah, it's definitely huge to keep guys healthy, and I think, you know, a six-man would be great for MLB. I don't know if they ever would actually do that, but I mean, they obviously want their guys to pitch every 5 days, but
seems like salaries would dictate that.
Yeah, they want to keep guys healthy, though. I think that's probably the best way. You know, you just get so much more rest in between. Just an extra day is so helpful.
Gotcha. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Nice meeting you.
Thank you.
All right. So, you know, I had this impression that Anthony was kind of a rough rider, and, you know, seeing his tendency to explode sometimes emotionally out there on the mound, I kind of expected some of that off the mound. But it turns out he's a really, really friendly guy and very nice. And like I said, he was very polite. He said, hey, look, I have to pitch tomorrow, so I have to do media before or after we talk, so we don't have much time. And I said, okay, well, I got my questions ready, let's go. And then bam, bam, bam. So anyway, what impressed you the most about this chat?
Oh, geez, a whole bunch. I really loved his sort of comments. And he designated for assignment to the DFA.
Yeah. Do we call him DFK?
Well, you know, it's funny because, oh, that's a good one, actually, yeah. You know, I remember somebody pointed out, it sounds like such a noble thing. Like you've been chosen. When it's really closer to done forever. But I enjoyed that. I thought getting his rhythm back, becoming a starter, that was an interesting choice of things. And this, he's basically slider, cutter, fastball, change. I'll tell you one thing about it. This is not in the interview, but he's about the most extreme ground ball pitcher in Japan right now.
Mm.
And the other one is, as you said, he has a demeanor of being, kind of a fierce mound demeanor. And I liked when you asked about the catcher. I usually ask about catchers, but I don't usually get such interesting answers.
Mm.
Except, oh, they're great. You know, all the catchers are great. It's like when you ask about the team, oh, it's great. You know,
right?
How was that rotten bagel you ate yesterday? Oh, it was fantastic.
Yeah, I've never had such a great rotten bagel before.
Exactly.
Oh, it's the best one I've ever had.
It was horrible, but I loved it. You know. Anyway, so
yeah, I know. What you mean.
So yeah, so just throw it to him, and then when I lose my cool, he's there to calm me down.
Mm.
I wonder how that worked with some pitchers in the past, because I'm, you know, this great story about Bob Gibson, who's basically a catcher, came out to cool him off once, and he said, "You know what? You know where we are?" He says, "Yeah, pitcher's mound." He says, "Who's the pitcher?" He says, "You are." He says, "Okay, get off my pitcher's mound."
Get should butt back to your office and stay out of mine.
Okay, exactly. So anyway, and the last thing I want to comment on is, my problem with the six-man rotation as a solution to elbow injuries is probably no. MLB went from a four-man rotate, tried to do that going from a four-man rotation to a five-man rotation. It really didn't work because they didn't solve the problem. And the problem was not rest. The problem was, at that time, pitch counts.
Mm-hmm.
This is in the 70s and 80s and 90s. Okay, so the five-man didn't work because it was pitch counts, and now the five-man doesn't work because now that they've figured out the pitch count thing, or, you know, which was a factor,
mm-hmm.
now batters are used to, basically, as somebody said about a Japanese pitcher, if he's throwing 92, you know, if he's throwing 91 miles an hour, when he's capable of throwing 96 and saving it for the end of the game, he won't get to the end of the game in MLB.
Sure.
Because everybody's so used to seeing high velocity. So, and the high velocity is really the problem in MLB. So I think moving it to, because relievers are just as, you know, relievers who work four innings a week or three innings a week and get plenty of rest and rehab on their arms are just as susceptible to Tommy John surgery as everybody else. So,
sure.
I don't think that's the way to go. I think they need to address the speed issue. So, okay. But that's just my two cents.
All right. Well, your two cents is worth a nickel sometimes. And
well, that's because of the value of the yen right now. So, okay.
Well, yeah.
It was 2 cents 2 years ago, and now it's a nickel. Exactly.
But, you know, I just think that maybe Japan is doing something right now, whether it is the once a week you normally get an extra day of rest, which Anthony said he loves it.
Mm.
And if a pitcher tells me, I mean, that's the first time I've heard a foreign pitcher come over and say, I love it, because mostly we get, yeah, you know, it throws me out of rhythm.
Exactly.
I have an extra day. I don't really feel good. I don't feel right. This is the first guy I've heard say, I love it. So that was impressive for me. He was the first one who said, the first one to me. I'm not sure if some of the other pitchers have said, yeah, it's okay, or I like it. But this, you know, Anthony said he loves it. So I think it can't help but benefit. And then, yes, look at it. We have to look at everything. It can't only be how many times they pitch a week. It can't only be pitch count, and it can't only be, you know, what they do in the bullpen. You know, some guys take fewer pitches to warm up. Some guys take more throws to first. You know, they count as bullets. The throws on the sidelines that a lot of the Japanese pitchers make to stay warm in between innings. Those have to count as bullets too. I know they're just tossing.
Yeah, they're just playing catch.
Yeah, I know, but it's not like they're sitting down resting. So,
well, true. I mean, Robin Yount's brother had a baseball career that ended before his official game. He was warming up in the bullpen and blew his arm out in the bullpen. And then when they announced he was going to come into the game, he couldn't throw.
He had to lift up his other arm and wave and say, no, I'm out. I'm done. Yeah.
Oh, that's scary. Okay.
Yeah, so, no, I'm just kidding. I don't know, but I'm just imagining.
I did that. I did that when I broke my arm in Little League Baseball. I had to wave with my right hand when my left arm was broken.
Wait a second. I thought you were a horrible baseball player as a child.
I was.
You only played like one game.
No. That was when I was an adult. I only played in one official game.
Okay.
Well, but as a child, I played in many, many horrible Little League experiences, games.
And broke your arm. My goodness.
And broke my arm.
Yes. All right. So I just, you know, like I said, going into this interview, I had this image of Anthony as a guy. Remember Ryan Glenn with the Lockton
Rhino?
Eagles?
Sure.
And I said, and I wrote a story in which I referred to him as volatile. And I remember you questioned me on that. And you said, volatile? And I said, I watched the guy, and he just gets upset. And I loved Ryan, and he was always accommodating, and he gave us anything we needed. I saw him before a game. This is back in, I'm assuming 2005, 2006. And
that time,
saw him before a game, and he said, hey, you need anything? And I'm like, no, I'm good. I'm here to just to cover the game. And he said, okay, cool. And he ran out to the outfield and got his workout in before the game. So, and I drew the same vibe from Anthony Kay, and because he's, you know, he can be dynamic out there, I guess you could say. Dynamic.
Dynamic, like the dynamic duo beating the heck out of a criminal.
There you go. Wow. So you can easily see when catcher Yudai Yamamoto goes out there, and I just love Yamamoto. And he has to go out there and settle things down, but you're right. He can sort of being, you know, add fuel to the fire. And, as I say about my first wife, cause she could go from 0 to 60 in a split second with the anger. And I'm like, I don't take her near open flame is what I told to friends. I think I just had that image that Anthony was similar, and he's just so nice. But I love that competitive part about his makeup. And I think that helps him on the mound. And, yeah, you talked about him being an extreme ground ball pitcher. So he went out the next day and fired 8 scoreless innings against the Giants, and easily his best game in Japan in terms of, you know, the results and what he did on the mound. And so I just, again, was blown away about how friendly he was. And that was going to be my talking point, was the fact that he's all for the rest that he's getting. And it's probably, I mean, it's different because we all have different bodies, and I always try to emphasize the fact that we're all different, and some things might work for some people and it might not work for others. And that he seems to be thriving with the rest and the rotation and the rhythm and the team. And it's just too bad that that team, the defensively, they'll just make mistakes here, there, and everywhere. And when the pitchers do get or execute the way they want, the fielders seem to not be able to catch the ball and turn those batted balls into outs sometimes, as what happened last night. And then they lost at Jingu. But in fact, I was messaging with Michael Westbay one night, and I said, yeah, Rowan Wick is out there, and he hasn't made the best. He hasn't executed his pitches perfectly, but they're not helping him in the field either. Guys were not making plays. And then even last night, I think Wick hurt his own cause by throwing a ball to second base that was offline, and they probably could have turned a double play, and they ended up not getting any outs on the particular play. I don't think it cost them runs in the end, but it's just extra pitches that they have to make to get out of innings, more stress. If the Bay Stars can turn that stuff around and start catching the ball a little bit better, I think they'll be okay. But great talk with Anthony. We certainly appreciate his time, and hopefully we can talk to him again. And just a quick shout out to Tyler Austin, who's really, really banging for the Bay Stars and has kept things up. I think he hit two home runs on Friday to help him win a game at Jingu. So, more power to him.
Kind of power he wants.
Yep. All right, making a four-team transition, we want to talk about the roster for the All-Star game. So I'm calling it an All-Star game roster posture. And two younger players were added to the All-Star game rosters as the plus one players, Ryuki Watarai of DeNA and Shin Mizutani of Nippon Ham. And that was cool. I was glad to see those guys, especially Mizutani. I don't know how he got overlooked in the voting and all that stuff.
Yeah, it was hard when you played for the Fighters this year.
I don't know. I'm looking at the Fighters as appointment viewing.
No. That's not what I meant. I meant that the Fighters fans stuffed the ballot box really well. And they basically voted in. I think they can vote in 9, 10, 11, 12 Pacific League players. And I think they voted in 10 Fighters. Not 9 fighters, and I can't remember who, the two of the non-fighters were Yuki Inagita and Kensuke Honda.
Well, I was just thinking that it makes sense because we are hearing less and less from Tsuyoshi Shinjo, the manager, which is good, and he has kept up his popularity, which is bringing a lot of fans to the stadium, the brand new stadium, and that helps. You got a new stadium. An exciting team, some young players who are basically bringing more attention to the team, bringing more attention to NPB. So it's good. It's working. You know, the whole machine is working up there in Nippon, in Hokkaido. So that's good. But as far as the roster, we see a lot of fringe all-stars on the teams this year because there are two games. And I can't dislike most of the selections, but where on earth is Roki Sasaki? What is going on here? The story I read said he wasn't voted in. The coaches didn't select him. This makes no sense to me. What is going on?
That is a good question. There's basically two schools of thought to that. One is that he is hurt.
But that doesn't usually stop the fans from voting a guy in.
No, well, the fans, well, because the fans voted and the players voted for Sachi Yamasaki. So there. I'm just looking to see, by the way, who else made it. No, the only fighters. Oh, Nakamura Takeya was the DH. That's the third non-fighter that the fans didn't vote in. So Go Matsumoto barely missed edging out Kondo for that vote, which is, of course, that's the way it should be. I think nobody wanted to go that way. So anyway, no, where is Roki Sasaki? Yeah, well, I'm going to take that in a different tangent. The fans, he finished second in the fan voting for starting pitchers.
Right. And, I saw that.
Right. And the players vote, he was also second. He was a very close second in the players vote, 88 to 85.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah,
so,
seen that too. Yeah.
Yeah. But now the question is, where is Roki Sasaki? Basically, there's been stories that he's not throwing, he's not fit. And there's another story going around that sounds like we're back where we were in December with both sides of the Roki Sasaki Lotte Marines discussing nuclear options.
Great.
Yes. And one of those options that I was talking about, you know, and when everybody said, oh, he'll be pitching for the Marines until he's 25 because no player is ever going to leave before that, blah, 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 blah. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and if you're one of those people who is saying that, you know who you are. One option was Sasaki not pitching, either him telling the team, oh, I'm not going to pitch if you don't give me what you want, or the team telling him, you're not going to pitch if you don't do what we want you to do.
Okay.
And there is a story going around that I heard from some people in baseball that manager Masato Yoshi had a come to Jesus talk with Roki Sasaki and said, you have to get your head out of your butt and stop thinking about MLB and start thinking about pitching for the Lotte Marines.
Mm.
Okay. So it is possible. One option is that he's not pitching because either he or the team have decided that they're going to sulk and pull an act like Achilles in his tent at the siege of Troy and I'm done with this. So that might be a good analogy. And at least until he gets killed with a spear in his ankle.
Oh no, stop.
In his ankle. Okay. Yeah. All right.
But this is not an all-star game without Sasaki. I don't know what we're doing here, you know. So,
interesting. That's a good point.
Yeah, I mean, sure. I looked at the list of pitchers for the Pacific League. Okay,
mm-hmm.
Who starts the game? Who starts game one? There's nobody who's an all-star worthy, name worthy guy who.
Well, they're playing in Hokkaido, so Sachi Yamasaki, obviously.
Yeah, but that people are not tuning in to see him throw. I'm sorry.
Fighters are. That's all that counts.
Well, they're the only ones.
I'm not saying
they're the only ones. I'm not saying it's like a minor league game where friends and family crowd the stadium, but it's just not. He just does not have the name recognition. He doesn't have. I don't ever see him talking about MLB as an option. He's not a big draw. I think they're all the same. You know, that game's going to sell out anyway. So it doesn't matter if they have a hometown player starting the game or not. Whoever they start the game, it's an all-star game. It's going to sell out at a beautiful park like that. Yeah, give me a break. Mm. So, that I was really let down by that. I was really let down. other than that, yeah, I just, okay, if Satya Yamasaki gets game one, who gets game two as the starter?
That is a good question. I mean, Kohei Arihara.
Yeah, they just probably.
It's going to be Kohei Arihara, I'm going to guess, or Tatsuya Imai.
Yeah, Tatsuya Imai
or Anderson Espinosa.
Yeah, but again, I look at the main rosters, and I looked at the CL pitchers, and I'm thinking there's a clear advantage with the pitchers here.
Well, there would be. Because this is what happens when one team's fans stuff the ballot box, is that the manager is left with very few options. He has very few, because the players vote. The players added, I think, seven players to the roster in the Pacific League that the fans voted in. So there was all that extra excess weight. There were only so many slots, and the fan vote took up so many of them. Although to be honest, a couple of them are hurt, not able to play. So
sure,
that hurts their league's team.
Yeah, but I mean, you look around. Let me finish my list here, and then we'll talk about it. But my list of the Central League pitchers: Hiroto Saiki of Hanshin, Daichi Osada of Hiroshima, he has pitched a no-hitter this season. Shosei Togo of Yomiuri has pitched a no-hitter this season. Hiroto Takahashi of Chunichi has a scoreless inning streak of 26 or so innings going. Rydell Martinez of Chunichi and Katsuki Azuma of DeNA. That group of guys is much better than any group the Pacific League can put together,
100%.
No matter what conversation.
Yep.
Yeah, so that was going to be my point. Short of the voting and who put in whom and all those things, they just have better pitching right now, and it has flipped. So,
they have better pitching. They certainly have better pitching in the All-Star game.
Those guys, there aren't guys in the Pacific League who can match those guys right now. And I know the leagues are different, so it's hard to cross. Carter Stewart Jr. has been pitching well recently. But I don't. I wouldn't flip him for any of the guys I mentioned up there. Not one of them.
No, I have to agree with you. So, I mean, Yuki Matsumoto, the Hawks. I'm going like Yeah, I know. I have to agree with you. I mean, there are guys I would like to have seen instead on the Pacific League roster, but I'm guessing some of their managers went, no, we're good without him playing.
Yeah. So I think the position players look a little more even on paper with the Pacific League going up against the Central League. But I don't know. It's so hard. We've got the ball situation. We've got, is it carrying? Is it not carrying? There must be something up with it. We've got the pitchers improved. We've got all kinds of things. So I think it's just defense. And, I think the Central League outfield defense leaves a lot to be desired defensively, but those guys are going to be expected to hit. So I don't know. It should be fun to watch the games. But again, they're just exhibition games. No one's really going to be going at each other that hard. So I'm not sure that we're going to see the best defense.
Let me ask, before interleague play, did you like the All-Star games?
I'm just not really. When I was a kid growing up watching the All-Star game, the Major League All-Star game, I just got, I don't know, there was a sense of disenchantment early on for me with, I'm like, well, none of the All-Star games are very good. The football All-Star, the Pro Bowl was the worst, and it was obvious. And then the All-Star basketball game was just guys running up and down the court playing sort of pickup basketball, sort of, but they're not even trying. We work harder at
pickup basketball. It was just a scoring contest. Players.
Yeah. But the baseball All-Star game was the closest we had to an actual game where guys were actually doing what they normally do.
Yeah, until the 70s, it was really, it was serious stuff. These guys really wanted to win. I think they got a little bonus for winning. Mm-hmm. I think this was I think it was probably free agency, which also, which did that. Because for some of these guys, their All-Star check was probably worth their more than what they were earning for the season.
I suppose.
And so they took it really seriously.
Yeah.
And now what the All-Star game is sort of like, come and wear these funky, ugly uniforms because Rob Manfred doesn't think the old
pajamas, look, man. They're pajamas.
Yeah, pajamas, exactly. We'll put on pajamas and go run around for a couple innings and collect your check. And see you on the red carpet next year.
Don't get hurt. Yeah, put on your pajamas and put America and the rest of the world to sleep. But
pretty much.
But yeah, so my affection for the All-Star game just kind of waned, and then I realized in Japan they play two, and I'm like, well, the first night is pretty exciting, but then the second night is we're doing this again. You know, what are we doing here? And then back in, I guess it was the 90s, we had Ichiro wanting to get on the mound. Did he actually pitch? I can't remember. But
he did.
He did pitch. And so that brought some excitement. But other than those gimmicky things, the All-Star game is a snooze fest for me. It's just one of those opportunities to see all the players. Oh,
that was a great All-Star moment.
Yeah.
Because Akira Ogi, the Pacific League manager, this would have been 1996. And Akira Ogi, the Pacific League manager, put in Ichiro to face Hideki Matsui,
mm-hmm.
and Katsuya Nomura, the very grumpy Katsuya Nomura, said he's not going to face Matsui. So he sent in Shingo Takatsu, his relief pitcher for the Swallows, to pinch hit for Hideki Matsui, and he grounded out.
The king of curmudgeons, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So, that was fun, but... And then my best All-Star game was 2004, was game two in Nagano, where I was there with Wayne Grassick. And it was a wonderful game because it was the game that everybody thought would be NPB's last All-Star game between the Pacific League and the Central League, because it was mm-hmm. there was a labor dispute. And Tsuyoshi Shinjo was the MVP. And it was really, really a weird game.
Yeah,
but it was like the players and the fans giving the middle finger to the owners.
Yeah, so I mean, yeah, the All-Star game as a break and as an exhibition game, and I still don't get the two games here, but that can be fun. But I have to force myself to watch, and I'm not excited, but. It is a good break. I like the break. I like the fact that we don't have games for a couple of nights, and we can, you know, mingle, go out to have dinner, and not have to worry about what the score is somewhere. So that's a good thing for me. That's what I look forward to.
Yeah, a good thing for me is I don't have to cover it anymore.
There you go. All right, let's make a two-seam transition. And I saw a couple crazy endings recently. Mm. You have there was something that happened in Tokorozawa at Seibu.
On Saturday night?
Yeah, save it on Saturday. So why don't you start, and we'll go from there.
Okay, yeah, this was kind of a weird one. Now, I didn't witness this, but when you see managers talking about rings, you know, they're usually talking about, like, championship rings.
They're supposed to be talking about championship rings.
Exactly. Well, I'm guessing... Hisanobu Watanabe, the Seibu Lions general manager and interim manager, wanted to... SoftBank's Darwinson Hernandez the Arthur Rhodes treatment. Now, if you don't remember 2001, I know some of you weren't born before 2001, my apologies. The Arthur Rhodes was a relief pitcher, a big relief pitcher for the Seattle Mariners, and he wore diamond studs in his ears, and umpire Tim McClelland in August of 2001 said, your earrings are a distraction. Take them out.
Mm-hmm.
And so
in August,
and then McClelland ejected his jewelry because the rule, MLB rule, is no field personnel may wear distracting jewelry of any kind. And then McClelland ejected Arthur Rhodes when he got some blowback from the pitcher. Mm-hmm. Okay, so we have that, and that happened. Then the Cleveland Indians, against who they were playing that day, the current Cleveland Guardians, then pulled that out in the playoffs. It didn't help them win the playoff series, but it did help them blow up Arthur Rhodes. So anyway, so last night, Hisanobu Watanabe, the guy in charge, the unfortunate man in charge at Cebu's mess, saw that Hernandez was flat. He could see the flashes, I'm guessing, of his wedding ring on the lefty's left hand. And he said, you know, that's against the rules, having that. So he pointed out to the umpire went out, had Hernandez remove his jewelry.
Sorry, wifey.
That's right. Sorry. And Hernandez struck out the first player he faced, but then hit the next two and then surrendered two singles, result breaking a 3-3 tie, and the Lions win 5-3.
Wasn't that a double? Wasn't Tonosaki, didn't he end up with a double, I thought?
Was it a double? It could have been a double.
I thought it was.
It was two hits.
I was watching the game. But
so yeah. Two hit batsmen and two hits. Okay. Mm-hmm. So that was that. Yeah. So, okay.
Killing his shine, man.
That's right.
Yeah, so I woke up this morning looking at that because I haven't seen the highlights yet. I was watching the game while watching other games, so I didn't notice that part, probably because I was more focused on Jose Osuna cracking home runs left and right in the rain in Jingu. But I did have the game. I did not notice that instance when Nabe Q decided to go Nabe on you. And I did see that. Tonosaki, I'm trying to find out if he had a double or not, just to make sure. But I thought it was a double because it went to the wall, but you never know. Yeah, it was a double. Yeah, so that's pretty funny. But I did have and we didn't get a chance to talk about this right after it happened, but I saw this double play to end the game. It was between the Dragons and the Carp, and I saw another game recently in which we had Chusei Manami racking up another outfield assist, but this one by throwing, and this was in the seventh inning, so it wasn't the end of a game, but he's throwing out Ukyo Shuto again, right, in the seventh inning. And it was a week ago today, actually, that this game took place. And I'm thinking, here's one of the fastest and best base runners in Japan trying to score on a single to right. Against a guy who's silly,
considering where Manami was playing. I mean, he was playing where some MLB shortstops used to shift behind first base.
But I disagree with you because
when he threw the ball, he was really close.
But it didn't matter because you're the best and fastest base runner in Japan, ostensibly in your mind for sure, and you're going to score on a single wherever. It doesn't matter where the defense is, in my opinion. And you look at the play, it took a perfect throw and a perfect tag to get him. So I don't think if it takes all that, then it wasn't silly.
Agreed. But I'm saying it wasn't like, you know, it wasn't the classic, but yeah, it was a bullet from shallow left field. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and you're saying shallow, and he threw a one hopper. So it wasn't his best throw, in my opinion.
No.
He should have gotten it there on the fly. And
no, but it was but that's the one where you need more of a quick release than a hard thrown ball.
So if you need that quick release, don't say silly. But that was not an ending. One of the endings I was watching was the Dragons and the Carp, and it was July 6th. And like I said, failed to mention it on the show, but we saw a 5-2 double play foul pop up to end the game, and nailing the tying run at the plate. And I have to be honest, I've never seen that combination of a 5-2 double play ending a game. I think I might have seen it, and certainly not on a foul. And it was just. I showed the play to somebody at work who likes baseball. And the first thing this person said was, set the situation. It was one out in the ninth inning. Rydell Martinez is on the mound against the Carp, and there's a runner at first, a fast runner. I forgot who it is, Yano or somebody like that. Somebody fast for the Carp. And first and third, one out. And third baseman Hiroki Fukunaga makes an over-the-shoulder Willie Mays style running catch, running away from foul, from home plate in foul territory. And it was a pinch runner was Ryutaro Hatsuki.
Okay.
And he takes off from home, and he's really fast. So he takes off from home. Fukunaga just gets up. And I mean, it was really Willie Mays style because he gets up and he just fires the ball. He unleashes this throw toward home. Now, it's probably not the greatest throw. And just like you said, in that case, in that instance, his teammates tell him, get the ball to home. The runner's going. So he just turns and throws. And it just misses Hotsky's, I don't know, left side. I don't know if it was shoulder or elbow or whatever. And it bounces. And Chunichi catcher Takuma Kato catches it and slaps the tag on Hotsky for the out and game over. And I mean, you never see that play. 100 things could have gone wrong on either side. I thought everybody made the right decision. It was the decision to run, because it was a shallow pop-up, but it was the right decision to run. The person I talked to at the office said, why is that guy trying to tag up? I'm like, because 101 times out of 100, that guy's not going to be able to make that throw.
Right. Typically in that position, I've never seen it with a third baseman, but I have seen it with a second baseman.
Mm-hmm.
Usually because his back's to home plate.
Sure, yeah.
And he's so focused on the ball that by the time, and often in an awkward position, that even though everyone's shouting at it, throw home, it's just not something he's programmed for.
Correct. And again, that was the tying run. So had Hotsky scored, it would have tied the score. And who knows, the Dragons can't score. They only have limited time to score. It takes them 3 innings to get things generated before they can get a run going. So they probably would have lost that game. But the chances of that throw getting away based on the angle and everything, I just thought it was the right decision to go. I thought Fukunaga made an incredible throw. I thought Kato made the best play of everyone, because he had to catch that bounce, the throw on the bounce, and almost blind, because it came from an angle which he really couldn't see it that well.
With the runner in the way, yeah.
And yeah, that's there was a somebody, hard play. I can't remember, I think it was Christian Rodriguez had gone toward the foul line, so he had to duck down and get out of the way so Fukunaga could throw the ball. So that was a good play on his part. I just thought it was very professional play. Everybody made the right decision.
To go back and listen to the video and it was a Dragons game, Dragons car. Where were they playing?
At Nagoya Dome or Bantanin Dome.
Okay, so that'll probably be on the archives on Dozens. Yeah. Maybe I can see that one, because that'll be interesting.
Watch Christian Rodriguez, because he has to get down out of the way in the first place for Kunaga to have an error.
Yeah, what I love about those plays is whoever misses the play, whoever comes out on the losing end of those plays where it's really, a smart play on both sides, the announcers will typically crucify.
Yes.
What a dumb play. And there was one of my introduction to this was when Dan Gladden was playing for the Omiuri Giants and they
mentioned that a couple of shows ago.
Yeah. That one is like, it's a super play, fantastic catch. The ball rolls out. What a bonehead play. It's like every pitch that's hit is high.
Right. Yeah. It's pitches.
Yeah. Pitches down. Yeah. Well, the pitch hit for the home run was really low high in the zone. It's like,
Yeah. Sometimes they get hit. And then another game, I think it was the next day, I think it was July 7th, and it was Hanshin DeNA. And again, Michael Westbay and I were messaging, because there were so many faux pas in this game, and it just seemed like...
Well, if you have Hanshin and DeNA, there's going to be.
Yeah, so Watarai of DeNA throws the ball away. He's playing shallow and right. He fields a hit, but he has an opportunity to get the well-known 9-3 put out at first base, but he rushes his throw. I mean, I would say he was going to get the runner. It's Fumihito Haraguchi, not fleet of foot. So
no.
Watarai has a great opportunity to end the game with a great throw. And instead he ended the game with a 2-run error, so to speak. I think they gave him a single. They gave Haraguchi a single because the ball got through the infield. Mm. But the throw was so offline. And it happens. And Watarai has had he's a rookie coming out of corporate ball, and he has had his struggles. In fact, when I went to Tokyo Dome this past Saturday to get this, not this past Saturday, but recently to get the interview with Michael Kay, I entered downstairs with Watarai,
Okay.
And saw him, and I said hello, and but he didn't know me, because it's the first time I think he actually.
Yeah, see, the players don't actually get to meet the reporters anymore, so.
Right. That too, but he hasn't seen me very much at any of the ballparks. But anyway, yeah, it was too bad. It was too bad because an accurate throw would have really made made up for Watanabe, who had made an error earlier on in the game, would have really made it up. And he blew it, and so the Bay Stars lose 6-5, and Tigers win. And I don't know, it was a great comeback, of course, because the Tigers put all those guys on base and got in that position. But a tough way to lose. So then we've had some crazy things happen, and jewelry aside, we expect a little bit more. All right, let's go to fielding questions. All right. So we got from London, Dushi sent us an email, and he says, picking up from Dave, our buddy Dave in Baltimore, he says, longtime listener, first time caller. He says, I wanted to hear your thoughts on what the heck is happening in Tokorozawa to make the Lions this bad. Of course, there's been a flood of players leaving and a raft of injuries, but even so, this team is on course to lose 100 games, a record worse than the 2005 Eagles. Is it coaching? Is it a scouting issue? Are the players on strike? Would love to hear your insights.
I wish I knew. I look at the Lions and I see a few guys with talent. So I'm guessing I don't see an abundance of talent. I think the Lions have upgraded their development program. But you know, this isn't one of these things. This is like, you know, it isn't one of these things you can just do. You can just set it up and do it. The Hawks have a really good development program, but when they got Carter Stewart, they didn't know what to do with an American. And he said, you know, I didn't even know how to throw. Nobody taught me. He had to sort of realize that he didn't know how to be a professional baseball player.
Sure. Yes.
So I'm guessing the development side is probably the biggest problem for them. I don't know that their scouting has been particularly poor. The free agency is kind of a demoralizing issue.
Sure.
They've sort of become the Hiroshima Carp of the Pacific League. And I say this because once free agency was created in the 90s so that the Yomiuri Giants could scoop up big name underpaid veteran players. The Carp were going to say, see ya. And the Carp went from being essentially had a dynasty that just crashed and burned before our eyes as one player after another moved on to other teams.
Mm-hmm.
So my guess is, the Lions have had that sort of front office. And as I've hypothesized for the last decade, that when teams know that the front office is not, you know, when they know there are teammates who aren't holding up their side of the, you know, their end of the bargain, or coaches that are slacking off or whatever, that it's not, there's always a question in your back of your mind, what do I need to do for me?
Right.
And what's best for me and not what's best for the team. And I think there may be a little of that in Tokorozawa, that the team isn't interested in keeping free agents. So when their best players get the free agency, it's pretty much like we're out of here.
Yeah.
So I think that's a thing. I don't know if that affects their day-to-day performance, but they're bad. You know, the Lions are, they strike out a lot, but not old-time Cebu Lions level crazy strikeouts, but they have a .247 batting average on balls in play. Which to me is a little bad luck. There's some of that is bad luck. If you're hitting so far below most of the teams are around in the area between 260 and 280, and then the line, so there's there's some of that, they're so extreme. And when you see extreme performance, the first thing should be, what is here that shouldn't be there? Now, some of it is going to be the fact that they're bad. But that if you look at their other numbers, that doesn't pop out. So I think there may be just some, and you say, well, it all evens out over a season. Well, it don't all out, even out over a season. So yeah. I think it's they have had some poor luck. So poor luck, poor morale. Anyway, the pitchers have been walking guys like crazy. And then not only have they been putting so many guys on base, but they've been really bad at the double play this year, which is weird because they used to be pretty good. But I think injuries to Sosuke Genda and Shuta Tomosaki have sort of got that. And they've been very good. Last year, they were getting really good reviews for their ability to throw out runners, base stealers, and they've been pretty bad at that this year. Yeah. They're bad base stealing. They're not hitting for power. They're not hitting for average. You name it, and they're pretty much bad at it. So, yeah. But I'm guessing it's mostly to do with the team. It's mostly to do with the team management and development, creating an atmosphere where players are going, why should I bother?
Yeah. You remember I said that I started hearing this sucking noise.
No, I remember.
8-9 weeks ago, and it's not getting louder, but it has changed in pitch, and it's unmistakably strong. Other than the talent leak over the past 10 years, you know, we've seen, as you mentioned, the free agency take a toll on the team. The Giants draft like other teams, it seems, but the players out on the field don't seem to. I mean, I'm assuming they get their reps and their game action on the farm, and they're doing the things that we would expect. But other than Shuta Tomosaki, who's the player in the past, let's say, 5-7 years, whom they developed? And we've seen that player come up, become a regular, and then contribute on the top team. Who's that guy?
Tomoyo Mori. Well, he was a free agent.
No, the past 5-7 years? No.
Well,
we just haven't seen it. And I think you hit the nail on the head, in my opinion, the development.
Hotaka Yamakawa.
He was there.
No, he was there
5-7 years ago.
Yeah, but that was after they left him on the farm team because they didn't like it that he struck out 3 times in 3 games as a pinch hitter. So they kept sending him back to the farm.
Okay. Well, but that's one. And one guy, you know, does not make a team. And,
no, but they've basically gotten rid of let their best players leave.
Well, I think you're hitting it on the head is we've seen a talent leak with free agency, but we've also seen a problem, not a problem, but something
not massive,
happening.
Not massive, but.
Cumulative effect.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. I think their farm development needs something active. Yeah. I mean, they've got the facilities. They pump money into it, and they are increasing their. I generally look when people ask me, you know, who's trying to be a really good team as opposed to who's just trying to get by and suck. I usually look at how many developmental players teams have on their rosters.
Mm-hmm.
And the Lions are they're in the tier two. Basically tier one, well, let's put it this way. Tier one is the Giants and Hawks, and it's pretty much almost tier 1A and tier 1B with the Hawks, who have like almost 60 players on there. And then the tier two teams are really Oryx and Cebu. Hiroshima might be in there too. So they've got the numbers, but they've just taken the training wheels off the bike and they're still a little wobbly. They got to learn how to do that thing.
Yeah. I would say I'm looking around and there might be a similar situation going on in Nagoya. We players we expected to develop just kind of disappear.
That's a Dragons. Really a Dragons thing.
Okay, but let me finish.
Go ahead. Oh, you're go ahead.
Yeah, we got Takaya Ishikawa, who we thought and we assumed and we saw flashes from him, but he hasn't developed on a linear plane. He's up and down in terms of production. And then this year, you know, they're pinch hitting for him. He's not starting every day. Anyway, they drafted a few guys. We, you know, Kenta Bright and other guys we expected maybe by this time would be producing. And then so we've got the fighters. We see how they draft guys. They get them in. They give them some games. We've seen. I don't think they can take credit for Shun Mizutani, but they certainly can take credit for Chusei Mannami and how he has gotten his time over the years and has gotten better.
And another thing I would give credit to the fighters is their professional scouting.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I think that's where Mizutani comes in. Of course, in the active player draft, it's the active player draft in December, the second round, the second chance draft is basically, let's see who we can get at the SoftBank Hawks thrift store this year.
Right. Yeah, they certainly hit
last year was too. Kotaro Otake. This year it's Shun Mizutani. Next year it's going to be somebody else who's going to instantly go and help make a team a contender.
Right. And we've seen the Bay Stars even have found some draft nuggets. They drafted Shugo Maki, and he has played from day one and been really good. Yudai Yamamoto, it has come over time. I think he's a seventh year guy, but now he is contributing regularly and playing. We just don't see that guy with the Lions.
I agree.
Yamakawa. Yeah, I give you that one. But you know, even with the Carp, we've seen guys come up and at least contribute and be part of the team and stay on the roster and find a spot on the roster. Even Shogo Sakakura, he isn't where maybe Jim thought he would be, but all that aside, he's playing, he's on the roster, he's usually got a spot, even if it's pinch hitting, he gets spot starts, he's there. But we don't see that guy with the Lions. And so I would say player development, and you know, we haven't seen a player come in and be great. So I can't blame their drafting and scouting, because other than Roki Sasaki, you know, who's the big star who has come out and really made an impact right away. We just, you know, there haven't been that many. Maybe after a couple, 3 years or so, but certainly not year one or year two.
It could be the scouting, but again, it's sort of a dilemma, like deciding how much of the runs allowed are the pitching and how much are the defense, because they're synergistic.
Yes.
You know, we don't know if there's a reason why this constant shuttling. I mean, the other teams the Marines are, I wouldn't hold up the Marines as an example of quality, but their policy is they're very similar to Cebu, but without the minor league resources, and they're not that different. I mean, they basically bring up guys, shuffle them around, and basically wait for them to lose their jobs. And the thing with, you know, when these teams like Oryx used to do, or the Giants did in a couple of years after of Tatsunori Hara, was they wait, you know, how long do you let this guy struggle?
Mm-hmm.
And how much pressure do you put on them to succeed? These are all issues. If there's so much pressure on them to succeed, to be the savior, that's tough. And then especially when you say, oh, well, don't strike out or you're going back to the farm.
Mm-hmm.
I did a study on called strikes. I found that the people who got the most, the people who got the fewest called strikes were often farm guys, because they weren't up. They knew that if they fell behind in the count, they're going back to the farm.
So they're not waiting around.
They were not waiting around.
And they're not taking strikes.
not waiting around is really the key. Teams that are patient, you know, they choose a guy based on their best information and their best assessment. And basically you have to go with that. And then when they fail, you have to go with that. You have to think, is this... And on the other hand, you get teams who say, well, this isn't working, let's go to plan B. Oh, and plan B isn't working, let's go to plan C. And that seems to be where the Cebu Lions have been kind of stuck the last two or three years.
Mm. And like I said, they're maybe not making the best decisions, although they did pick up Daiju Nomura from the SoftBank.
Oh, great acquisition, I think, yeah.
And he has been
He started slowly, but
he's a sixth year. He's an interesting guy because sixth year player, but he's still only 23. He's going to turn 24 in September. And he's the guy who, if people who might follow us on Twitter or X, we were commenting about him missing first base recently when he rounded on his first hit. His was supposed to be his first hit with the Lions, but it was supposed to be a double, and he missed first base, so he got wiped out.
Yeah, but he's kind of making up for that. He's finding his, you know, this is a guy who was just an on base machine in the Western League, and SoftBank was going, well, we got other guys that can do that, so yeah.
Yeah.
Take your ticket and wait in line, and maybe we'll call you.
Yeah. So the Lions are giving him some time, and he has put up decent numbers.
He was terrible at the start. Now he's good.
After he missed first base, and I remember you and I were talking about it, and I said, yeah, I think he knew. I think he knew that he might have missed first base, but he was so focused on trying to get the second that he decided he would just keep going. And apparently they saw that. That was another crazy instance we should have mentioned, because that was fun. That would have been fun to talk about. But and so picking up guys like that, yeah, he's making an impact here and there, but he's not an impact player, I would say. And
I think he can be, but I don't see that. I don't see that as I see him as just being a regular with a good on base percentage.
Okay, well, I don't see it. I don't see impact, but you know.
Well, we're just splitting hairs over definitions. I mean, he can be a regular player on a team that doesn't have many good ones. So yeah,
okay. All right. But yeah, the Lions need, I think we talked about the revamping of their philosophical or their mission something within the development part, and figure out how to match the kind of players that they draft with that mission and start from there, because something's not working. But again, and they blamed the manager. And I said the entire first year that Kazuo Matsui doesn't have the roster to produce a winning situation. I thought he was doing a great job that first year. I thought he was doing a fine job the next year. And then we end up, you know, he steps away or steps aside or gets pushed out or whatever happened there. And like I said, NabiQ comes down, and now he's pointing out jewelry on other teams to help them get a win. And that's what it comes down to. They're going to finish that series today or tonight in Tokorozawa. We'll see if the Lions can win before they go into the All-Star break. But, you know, win or lose, what are they, like 30 games under 500? I mean, they're buried here early on. And it just doesn't seem like there's any route to becoming, even next year, a team that's viable.
They're 31 games below 500.
31.
Yeah, they probably should be better than that. But when I see that, I think, okay, there's a little panic there. And I think that's probably when you see teams like the 2005 Eagles get a record as badly as they did.
Mm-hmm.
When you just everybody starts underperforming because they're trying to overperform.
Sure. But I will tell you this, the Tonosaki, the double he had last night to drive in the winning runs, the entire bench, the Lions guys, most of them now these young kids who are getting a chance to play, they were all out in front of the bench jumping up and down like little kids. And
yeah, well, some of them never seen a win before.
Hashtag high heat.
It's like Chris, it was like toys for tots.
But that's the kind of excitement. I heard somebody on Pro Yaku News say, you know, they need somebody showing a lot of fight and showing a lot of excitement on a single, you know, whether they end up winning that game or not, they need to show that excitement. I'm like, yeah, you know, I can be really excited about going to work today. Is that going to mean I'm going to win? We'll have to see. You got to perform. I mean, you know, excitement is good, but you have to calm yourself down and perform. So, all right. So we have a couple more questions. We really appreciate the question from Nushi, who actually asked a follow-up question, and we'll get to that another time. But he also said his grandmother lives in Tokorozawa, and that's why he became a Lions fan back in 2004. Now, what do you remember about 2004, Jim, that made it easy to become a Lions fan?
Wow. Other than everybody wearing their, all the Pacific League fans wearing their Unity bracelets to stick it to the owners. Goodness me. Well, 2004 was it? Well, yeah, that was a championship year for them.
That was a championship year. It took a little while, but you got there.
Daisuke Matsuzaka, and who became a big game pitcher that year. He'd been a kind of a big game loser until that time. And he just sort of like put all that junk aside, and he became a star in 2004. I mean, he had a star name. He was a star in high school, but as a pro, he was a guy who threw straight fastballs and basically said, let's see how far you can hit this if you can hit it.
Yeah. Yeah. So Yushi said his grandmother lived there in Tokorozawa for many years. Ah. And so, yeah, I'm thinking, yeah, well, it's easy to become a fan of a team in 2004 when that team wins the championship. And what do I remember about 2004? The Dragons had a chance to win a championship and end this horrible drought, and they were up
7 games.
And they lost 2 games in a row to lose that series. So that's all I remember.
Well, that's what the Dragons used to do. Somebody, when I was Yomi Uri, you know, me and my numbers sometimes and computer stuff, and I went through the books, and in 2006, all the Dragons were saying, oh, we got to get this series back to Nagoya, and then we're going to win. And I looked up their history of going back to their home game, their home stadium, in a series losing 3-2, and they basically lost every game.
Well, that doesn't matter.
Like 5 series in a row. No, it does not matter, but it was just sort of a note.
They just, that's what guys tell themselves to get themselves going. So
sure, but that was sort of like saying, let's get to the lifeboats, and then finding out all the lifeboats have holes in them.
Yeah. The death boats. All right, guys, thanks for the question. Anyone else who has a question, hit us up on x.com at JBW podcast with the hashtag high heat. Send questions via email to yakyujohn@gmail.com, or go to the Facebook page and leave us a note there. Look for us on iTunes. We will talk to you next week with Claudio Rodriguez is going to sit in for us. And we're going to talk Midsummer Classic, and we're going to do a midseason special. So we will talk to you next week. Enjoy your baseball.
See you at them ballparks, midseason or whenever.
Follow the hosts on Twitter at JBW Podcast and at JBallAllen. Submit your questions with hashtag High Heat and listen for an answer in an upcoming episode.